and welcome to the final edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by, one last time, Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 1995 was basking in the glow of having been drafted by the Washington Bullets fourth overall in the 1995 NBA draft. Sheed went on to have a fantastic career, the second highest value over replacement player of any player taken in the 1995 draft, behind only Kevin Garnett. The difference between the two is hilarious. 96.9 value over replacement player for Kevin Garnett. In second place, Rasheed with 38.3. Kevin Garnett was very good at basketball, as was our pal Sheed. Katie, how does it feel to be doing this final episode of A Basketball on the day after Rasheed Wallace was drafted way back in 1995?
It feels really fitting. It was like, it's the beginning and this is the end. Like, it feels meant to be.
Totally. Also, again, the searching for Rasheed Wallace's name is a total mess now. This segment wouldn't have been possible going forward because he's on the Lakers now, and it's hard to find anything that's not Lakers. When you search Rasheed Wallace June 29th, all you get is he signed with the Lakers back on June 6th. He's going to be assistant coach. Did you know that Sheed's going to be an assistant coach with the Lakers, Katie? They got to refresh this goddamn algorithm.
Yeah, we've known that for quite some time. Get some new news.
Yeah, it would be swell if that could happen. So, Katie, this is the final episode of Basketball. We announced last week, of course, that we were winding things down and making this our final show. It's sad. I'm feeling a little emotional about it. I've really, really enjoyed doing the show, and I've really, really enjoyed, getting to talk to you every week. It's one of the best parts of my week. So, I'm certainly going to miss that. But, it felt like time, as we kind of detailed last week. But instead of our usual format of episode this week, instead, we are going to go with an Ask Us Anything mailbag. We've solicited questions from a lot of folks, former guests, listeners of the show, Twitter people, all that good stuff. We're going to run through those questions on today's show, give them some good time and thought and energy, and that will be the way we ride off into the sunset on our trusty steed. Before we do any of that, though, Katie, I have to ask you one last time. How was your week? What's been going on? How are your last 7 days as a human being?
Good, man. Good. Was up north, as you know, recording. We didn't record.
You were up north last week when you recorded?
Yes, we did. I'm like, what day of
week is it? What is time?
You know why? It's because we went during the week and then like got back on a Saturday and it really threw everything off.
Oh, that's a weird one. Yep.
Yeah. But we had to come back to town because it was my dad's birthday. Hung out with my parents on Saturday. My dad was really happy.
Happy birthday to DJ God. We love DJ God. Former, do we get a question from him for the podcast? Former guest?
No, I can text him and see if he got one. I should have, actually. He was a former guest. And he's actually, I didn't tell him it was over, but he does ask about it. And he'll be, because he's always like, when can I come on again? So he'll be upset that he can't. But he's got it pretty good in June. It's his father. He's got Father's Day. Then it's my parents' anniversary. Then it's his birthday, kind of like week after week after week.
So, oh, right on.
Yeah, he cleans up pretty well in June. other than that, man, I'm looking forward to outdoor lane swim starts again tomorrow. So that's going to be sick for me. Been training all winter at the Y to get back to my retiree friends at the morning lane swim at the outdoor pool at Monarch Park. Really stoked for that. What else? I'm getting ready for summer league. I'm getting kind of like letting myself start to get excited.
Yay.
Little bit anxious because last year there were at least mask mandates. Now it's like, as you know, as we all know, the United States is post-COVID. So I don't know.
We'll see how that goes. It doesn't exist there. COVID? What is that?
Yeah.
But
I got a few cute stories lined up. So I think it'll be fun. Otherwise, pretty good week. I'm feeling good. I feel like my best self in the summer, fortunately or unfortunately. So that's how I'm doing. How was your week?
That's good to hear. My week was fine. The time goes very quickly. Our wedding is now like less than 5 weeks away, which is yes. wild. And there's a lot to do still. And also, you know, the crush of day-to-day living also sort of, you know, heaps a lot of time strain and pressure onto everybody. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a stressful sort of harebrained time at the moment. However, I'm very much looking forward to the wedding itself and to the three week honeymoon we have planned for August, where I'm not going to talk to or think about another person in the world other than my beautiful wife. So that will be great. But yeah, for now, it just feels like everything's going at 1,000 miles an hour at all times, and my brain feels like a goop. Did go to a couple concerts over the weekend. That was fun. Saw the OBGMs and Nobro in Hamilton on Friday night. That was a good time. And then I know you're not an Arkells head, and I take or leave their music as well, but they had a pretty fun sort of, hey, we're back kind of show.
What happened?
On Sunday.
A basketball court in Hamilton.
A basketball court in Hamilton. Very cool. Really awesome thing they did in partnership with the only good city councilor in Hamilton. One of like three good ones. Shout out to Narinder Nan, my ward's councilor. They opened up a new court.
Can't believe we're blowing up the Arkells on our last episode of the show.
very, very cool thing they've done, putting that court in that neighborhood, which desperately needs something like that. And it's going to get a ton of use, and it looks awesome, and it's very, very awesome. And the show they did was a lot of fun. You know, they played a cover of Gimme Gimme, Man After Midnight, all that, whatever you want to call the song. It was fantastic. That's all I needed out of that show, and had a great time. So, yeah, that made me feel old and tired because my legs hurt from standing at two straight concerts back-to-back nights. But other than that, doing all right. I just wish, you know, you're in your lane swim mode. I have been very much not in my ideal state of biking all the time just because there's no time to ever do it. And it's also been 10 bazillion degrees and it feels dangerous to go out when it's 40 plus with humidity. But otherwise, hanging in there, you know, in spite of the horrible, horrible state of the world around us. Donate to an abortion fund today if you have the means. Fuck. What a shit show. But yeah, Katie, we have a mailbag to get to on today's show. I guess we will do the thing where we have a little break. So we'll do that now and come back on the other side and dig into our mailbag episode, taking your questions from the listeners, from former guests and friends alike, all coming up in just a second on the final episode of Basketball? All right, Katie, we've reached the end. It's the final segment we're trying out this week. It's the final segment or final thing we're talking about this week. It's a mailbag. We have lots of questions we're going to dig into here to send us off for our final episode. We have the questions listed in here in our Google Doc. What if we do a little exercise where we each go back and forth and choose the question we want to dig into? You go first, Katie, if you want to have first right refusal on questions.
Oh, we're not just going to run down the list?
No, I think it's fun if we do a little, hodgepodge. We pick where we want to go. We can save what we want for the last and all that stuff. You can, it's a little choose your own adventure with the questions we have. No one else knows this. We could be going in straight order. People would never know. But for us, this is a fun little way, I think, to spice it up and make it so we kind of each have agency over the pathway of this mailbag.
Okay, well, I'll start with the response I just got from my dad. Well, I said, we're recording our final episode of this basketball podcast you came on, and we're asking for previous guest questions. Do you have a question? Can be basketball related or not basketball related? Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything right now. Sure. Fair.
Thank you, DJ God. Yeah. Everyone go back in the catalog, listen to the episode where Katie's dad came on and gave us tips for Vegas. One of my favorite episodes we did over the course of 2 years. Just great stuff.
I will pick a real one. I will pick James Herbert, one of James Herbert's questions, which is, what's John's worst basketball-related opinion?
Interesting.
Your just like vehement disdain for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's it. You have a lot of other very specific and idiosyncratic basketball related opinions. We can talk about the Elam ending, which you are obsessed with, which is fine.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah.
But this one, this is the worst because you heard, we had a whole episode dedicated, you know, to like a very healthy kind of back and forth arguing out, basically arguing against your points, which are all very emotional, very emotionally based argument. And
they're
disdain.
Not, though. They're not emotional at all. You're they're ironclad in the middle, right down the straight shooter takes.
About them. So yeah, that I think has got to be your worst, because I think weirdly, there's a lot of things that you like that team as it stands now has a lot of the things that you like about basketball teams and like
explain
the team you like to watch.
You like Shea.
Anthony Edwards. You like the Grizzlies. You kind of like these guys don't necessarily get to play that way concurrently, but when you watch.
Yeah, it's because they don't have any fucking players. SGA, they have no NBA players. They're terrible.
Ludor. No, they're not. Like, they have great. They do have, like, I don't know, Josh Giddey. It's like they have an interesting, weird, fun team that hasn't fully formalized into something yet. Some of that, yeah, is because there's no clear sense of where the team is going and what they want to do. And that can't be helpful. But the players that they have now are very much your style of weirdo player. But I don't think you can get past your severe hatred of the team long enough to see that. And sometimes it bums me out.
It would be really cool if we could see those players actually play a full season. But the thing that happens is those cool and good players play. They win too many games for Sam Presti's freak likings. And then they shut them down for arbitrary reasons. Oh, he's got an injury. It's so bad. It's like, no, Shea's walking around just fine. Like, this is nonsense. They are so obviously transparently gaming the system so they can try to draft Chet Holmgren's every year. And look, I think Chet Holmgren's cool, actually. He's one of the cooler guys that seems to have been drafted on draft night. He seems like kind of a badass. I'm rooting for his success, but I'm not rooting for Sam Presti's success because I think his pathway is bullshit. And I'm not going to change that. This might be my worst opinion, but that's fine. I'm cool
it is your
and
worst
I will
opinion.
Live with it.
So right. That's your answer as well.
Well, no, I think my worst opinion is probably like my general disdain for Jason Tatum, even though he's never really done anything for like to have me dislike him except for beyond the Celtics. But like I'm obviously wrong when I say Jason Tatum isn't great or that he's not like an unbelievable player. But I'm OK to live with being wrong because I just don't want to like Jason Tatum. So I think that's probably my worst basketball opinion. I don't have a lot of bad ones. They're all pretty good, but that one's not great. What's your worst basketball opinion?
I don't have one. All mine are usually pretty accurate. And pretty balanced, and I'd say fairly nuanced. You can attempt to answer if you like.
What is your worst basketball opinion? It might be your defense of the Oklahoma City Thunder, actually. looking through the very transparent tank job they're doing, the fact that Sam Presti never stops just hoarding draft picks like a goddamn freak. And then when he does, he like, oh, look, I've consolidated all my picks. I'm going to draft two Jalen Williamses like a fucking sicko. Why would you do that to the broadcast team of the Thunder? Why would you do that to the Thunder players themselves? That's just a confusing thing to do. But he's a sicko and doesn't care. Sam Presti, anyone who supports him, that's your worst basketball take. Anyone that is shared by anybody. It's James's worst basketball take. It's yours. Man. I am going to miss having this outlet to talk about how much I hate the Thunder. I will say that. maybe it's off-putting to people, but I like it. Shall we move to the next question, Katie?
Yes, please.
Okay, this question comes in from James Gleason, and it is, could Tim Duncan beat Katie in a 100-meter freestyle?
Ooh. I mean, probably. He's so long, you know, just like stroke wise, the number it would take for him versus me, you know, the only way I could have an advantage would be my push off and like how well and how long I could stay underwater, I think.
Right. You know? Right.
And if I could do
the like test the bounds of what's legal.
Fish move. Yeah. Like there's people that I swim with. Like, I guess I think they're competitive swimmers and it's just like part of their training, but they swim with fins or they swim with these things that look like gloves. I don't know if they're weighted like on their hands. But a lot of them will just try and stay under as long as they can. And watching them underwater, because you see them as you're swimming, they swim like weird dolphins. Like they swim like the like fish people. They move their bodies in like a undulating kind of way. I can't do that. But if I could learn how, maybe I would stand a chance. But I don't know. I just feel like even if Tim Duncan is not a strong swimmer, he's a strong martial artist. So, yeah, I don't know. He's got the like mental capacity, you know, like he could probably take me. So I don't think I stand a chance.
I do find it interesting here because I figure if this were the case, like you'd be wired to try to beat Tim Duncan. Whereas I don't know if Tim Duncan, now that he's retired, really has that like competitive streak necessarily. Like maybe he does. I mean, anyone who is one of the 10 best players of all time probably has a bit of a competitive streak. But I wonder if maybe he's kind of left that behind for a bit more of a chill vibe. And maybe he just kind of, you know, doesn't go, maybe he goes 75% exertion for the race. Not in any sort of like, I'm just going to let Katie win this. But maybe he just doesn't sort of carry the urgency that you might. If this were a longer distance race, Katie, say this is like a 1,000 meters or something like that, 20 lengths of the pool, is that it? What would your, do you think you would stand a better chance in a long distance race, or are you kind of hoping to catch him in a sprint?
I don't know, because he's probably got great lung capacity too. You know, he's got big lungs.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, he's got, oh my God, what's his nickname? Which Buddha? Stone Buddha. So he's obviously, you know, I think he would do well at long distance too. He could really persevere.
Right. Right.
I don't know. This is tougher than I thought.
Yeah, I think you're not giving yourself enough credit here. You are a practice swimmer, Katie. You're in your lane swim mode. I feel like Tim Duncan's probably not in peak condition. So if you just dropped both of you in a pool, I feel like I would put a little bit of money down on Katie Heindel winning that race. Channeling your inner Ledecky, if you will. It's your turn to pick a question, Katie.
Okay. Oh, this one's cute. Where would you set the over of Sheed's mile count in his time on the Lakers bench next year?
See, this is tricky because I feel like he's inclined to smile, as is shown in the fabled Google search that is Rasheed Wallace Smile. But he's going to be on the Lakers. And it feels like that might be fucking miserable because it seems like they're running back the same team as last year. Like Russ is back. They're not making any big moves. They might lose some guys like Malik Monk. It's going to take, I think, a lot of will for Sheed to want to crack a smile during his tenure with the Lakers next season. Am I underrating his propensity for smiles, or is the team construct and context going to be a little too much to set this number terribly high?
I mean, look, he's going to have to set a precedent, right? As like, yeah, as an assistant coach. So he's going to have to early on decide like what kind of assistant coach he wants to be. We didn't really get to see him in this role. We only got it for like what, a season in Detroit. So I think there's still, his options are open is what I'm trying to say. So he can decide. I feel like because of the nature of the franchise, yes, they're kind of like self-obsessed with being like serious winners, but they also have some of the goofiest like players, you know. And by goofy, I mean like LeBron can be pretty corny sometimes. And he has done some pretty corny things in game, mostly against the Toronto Raptors, but he has. So I think Sheed will have to strike a balance early on. But that said, like it is very hard to fight against your true nature, you know? Especially as we get older, we do kind of, I believe people can change, but you also do kind of age into your tendencies. Hopefully those are good tendencies that you've worked on, but the good ones, like, why not lean into them? And I could see, like, many times last season where this team was just like lost, looked like totally lost. You kind of wouldn't mind somebody on the bench making a really funny joke at your expense and laughing at you. You know, to add some gravity back into the situation, like take the air, like, you know, like also like deflate the moment, but also make you feel like, oh yeah, like a lot of this has to do with me, you know, and like, I can't remove myself from this terrible situation I'm in. I can laugh at it and I can work to improve it. So I could see him having some smiles and like some laughing moments. I could see it.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, over the course of a full 82-game season, like, can we expect a smile a game from Sheet? Is that too much? Is that too low? Like, if I'm setting the over-under at 82.5 or 81.5, are we getting more than one smile per game from Sheet? I'm assuming he's like a, I don't know, I'm guessing he's a front bench assistant on this team. I'm not sure how they're going to arrange them all and all that stuff. So we'll have plenty of, like, opportunity to see it. I think this depends a little bit on the sort of tone that Darvin Ham sets as well, right? Like, if Darvin Ham comes in as a fun-loving, you know, everyone's chuckles, all that type of guy, then maybe that sort of frees up Sheed to be more loose with the smiles. But if Darvin Ham is very serious and they're sort of committing themselves to the work, I wonder if maybe Sheed kind of buttons up a little bit. It's like 81.5. Are you taking the over or under? Are we getting a smile per game out of Sheed this year?
Oh, under. I mean, even the most cheerful person is not finding things to smile at, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And not with that team. That's true. Yeah, I don't mean he's going to just be like a beaming, you know.
Smile purveyor?
Self-contained, yeah. Like, sun on the, like, that's psychotic. I just mean, like, he'll bring, I think, needed moments of levity. So under, definitely under.
All right, well, so we'll set the over-under at 41.5. We'll get Vegas to let you bet on it and go from there. We might need someone who's the designated Sheed smile counter throughout the season as well, which, mm-hmm. you know, we'll pay someone to do. That's where the payroll for a basketball will be devoted for next season. Let's go. This next question also comes from the same asker of the previous question at B-Ball Thinking, asking, what is your pick for your future favorite redemption narrative in the NBA? Katie, what do you got?
Future redemption narrative.
Yeah, like someone who's maybe still in the sort of down phase, or is maybe even yet to hit that nadir and is Russell looking Westbrook. To sort of... Interesting.
It's Russell Westbrook.
Okay. We found your worst basketball take, so that question's been answered.
I think he's deserving of one. Two, it would be a huge
I'm not saying
surprise.
He's not deserving.
And
yeah.
I think people would, I think, I can't think of a, per, even like, everyone would get behind it, you know? It, like, even freaking Skip Bayless would have to get behind it, so. yeah, I think it, you know, in terms of most impactful, yes. In terms of most likely, I'd like to see that for John Wall, actually, because I saw...
Oh, yeah.
I saw a picture that he posted this morning. I guess he was part of an MBPA camp, and it's just like someone took it from him from behind, and he's turning back to look over his shoulder, and he's holding a basketball, and he's smiling, like the most genuine smile. He looks so happy. It's just like very... Still, when I think about the fact that he didn't play this past season, just because the team asked him not to, not for any other reason. Like, it's such a bummer to me. So the fact that he gets to play again, I feel like he fits very well on that team. He knows those guys, probably likes those guys. Those guys are his speed. You know, I want that for him. So I think that's probably more likely. But the biggest one, it would be Russ.
Yeah, Russ would be a big one. I guess I'm trying to frame this as like future ones that could happen. And I'm really kind of struggling to see the pathway for Russ. Like, maybe he gets moved back to Oklahoma City and makes them a respectable franchise again. Who's to say? But I just, it seems like I fear that Russ's career is going to go the way of Carmelo Anthony, as opposed to some other sort of late career resurgence star, where Carmelo kind of, you know, he famously like didn't play for a year or almost a year, ends up going to OKC, and then that doesn't work out. He goes to Houston and kind of bounces around. And I don't want that for Russ necessarily, but I kind of think if I'm reading the tea leaves after this contract is over, that might be sort of the path that Russ goes on. And that's a bummer to think about for sure. John Wall's a really good one. I am happy for him. He was a very, very good player who I didn't probably enjoy the peak of because, you know, his team beat the team I like in the playoffs, and I held a grudge over that for a couple of years, which is silly. But hey, sports fandom is silly inherently. So yeah, I'm happy to see John Wall in a place where like he should be set up for success. Is not going to be sort of, you know, viewed as this sort of albatross guy who just exists to make a lot of money and not play. So looking forward to the John Wall resurgence for sure. I think for me, look, this is maybe also unlikely, although I think probably a little bit more likely than Russell Westbrook, is Chris Paul. It's like, we're running out of time, obviously. He's fucking 37 now, and the Game 7 against the Mavericks was just so, so, so bad for everybody, but in particular Chris Paul, because it really did feel like his maybe last shot at it all. If there's some pathway here for Chris Paul, even just to win a title in like the Gary Payton on the Heat fashion, I would like to see that. It feels like he's fallen so short, like, so many times, and it fucking sucks, man. I love Chris Paul, and I want him to win a title, and that would be a great redemption narrative. I would also say this guy might already kind of be on the uptick after the sort of nadir for him, and maybe this postseason kind of stands as a version of the nadir, but I think Karl-Anthony Towns is going to have himself a really good next 5 years. Like the Wolves seem like they're kind of building something real. They've got Anthony Edwards there, and Towns has always been viewed as this sort of like weak and sort of, meek fellow. I think Jimmy Butler kind of has a lot to say for that reputation that he carries. And I've never really liked that. I've always thought Towns is really good, and he seems like a really genuine and cool guy who's gone through a lot of fucking shit the last couple of years. And I look forward to a world in which Karl-Anthony Towns is like, just, oh yeah, that guy's one of the three best centers alive. He's the guy behind Jokic and Embiid, no question. It's those three guys and everybody else. And, you know, maybe some Wolves success along with it. What do you think of Towns as a potential redemption arc?
But I don't think Towns has like had, like, what does he have to redeem himself from? He just hasn't.
I guess
really...
the it's not like playoff failures. It's like failure to win anything ever.
Yeah, but that's, I don't think any of that is his fault.
Like, I also agree with that.
Very situational.
Totally.
So I just don't think, I guess I don't think, one, I think of this as more of like, I guess, a later career thing. For you to have something to like redeem yourself from, you have to have substantially more years behind you, I think. So I don't know. I think it's an unfair qualifier for Towns. So no, I don't agree with it, but it's your answer to the question.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think your point stands too. Like, there's probably even more downs in the future of Kat's career, just because that's the nature of being in the NBA and being in the playoffs and stuff like that, is you're going to lose and it's going to suck. I guess, yeah, redeeming the sort of reputation, I suppose, is sort of the way, because I think it's been entirely undeserved, the way he's been kind of viewed as this soft player. And I would hope that that's kind of turning around here going forward, but we'll see. Katie, I think you're up. You get to pick the next question. What you got?
Okay. I don't know which ones I should save for the end. okay. Let's just, we can get a little bit metaphysical. So this from Colin McGowan. Great writer, one of my faves.
The best.
If you don't read Colin, Colin doesn't get nearly as much like shine, because I think he just writes, and he writes really well, and then he kind of clocks out, which I respect. But Colin writes primarily for Real GM, so just like go read all of his stuff. But Colin asks, first time, long time, what is your definitive answer to the name of your podcast? This, I'm wondering if he means how many H's or if he's like, why did you think
of it? I think he's asking, like, what is the answer to the question? Basketball?
Oh, interesting. I was like, the name? I thought we'd explained that before, which was that I just wanted to call it basketball. And then everyone was like, the SEO for that's going to be a nightmare, you dummy. Right? So then we changed it.
Changed it to really amp up it by just adding an before it.
Yeah. What's the answer to the, for you, like, what's yours? I'm going to have to think about this.
Well, so the conceit of the episode is, it was more, it is the answer to a question, right? It was, what's your podcast about? Yes. Basketball? Yeah, that was sort of the original thing. But if you want to flip it on its head and say that the question is basketball, I think I have to think about that for a sec as to what my answer would be. It might just be yes. Indeed. Perhaps. Something like that. If we're going to reverse engineer it, maybe it's perhaps is the is
yeah, mine probably is maybe.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Question that's broken my brain. Thank you, Colin. But I think we've gotten there. You don't have a longer sort of philosophical answer to potentially toss out?
No, because it would be bullshit. Yeah. So I'd say that that answer is something we are all trying to do in one way or another, whether that's just through our fandom or if how we digest the game, how we talk about it, if we write about it, you know, like, I think we are always trying to unravel this question. And I think it's a bit of a Pandora's box, which is why we keep coming back.
Yeah, for sure. Next question. Shall we move on here?
What am I at here?
Okay. This one comes from at Tristan Gray from Twitter asking, how do you feel like your friendship has changed over the time you've spent time podcasting together? What is something that your co-host has introduced you to that you now appreciate or love? What's a quirk you'll miss about basketball? We're going to get nice with this question, I think. For me, I would say our friendship, I think, is very much been solidified over the last couple of years, I would say. You're one of the people I talk to the most. You might be my closest work friend, Katie. I don't really have work friends as a freelancer who works from home all the time, but I consider you a dear friend, and I love getting to talk to you. It's fantastic. As far as what you've introduced me to, I think, honestly, you've introduced me to feelings as a way to consume basketball. And I appreciate that so much. I remember back, I think it was like an early Locked On Raptors episode. It might have been your first time on. And I hadn't had you on the show before. I wasn't really sure what your vibe was. And it's always kind of a feeling out process when you first get someone on. And I was trying to just do like a straight up a basketball analysis. Let's talk about trades. Let's talk about X's and O's, that type of thing. And you took it in such a direction. And I was like, I don't really know what the hell's happening right now. I think I like it, but I don't know what's going on. This is new. And I think have kind of revised the way I think about basketball in large part due to talking to you so much. And you are probably one of the most influential people on the way I think about basketball. I think you and I would say Sean and Joey with Round Ball Rock are big parts of this too. But yeah, I don't think anyone has helped inform the way I kind of think about it and has also made me enjoy it more, because I was deep in the throes of Dunked On brain for a few years there. Like 2014 to 17, I was looking at the cap. I was listening to mock off seasons. I was talking about players as assets. I used the phrase human trade exception more than once. And I don't do that anymore because it sucks. And I think you are a big reason why I kind of got on the path to enlightened basketball watching. And so I appreciate that very much for you. I kind of missed like the free Darko era of blogs, which I think I would have liked had I kind of been online when that was a thing. But you, Katie, are my free Darko. So thank you.
Thank you, Sean. That's very, That's very nice. Also, like, no pressure to be like, this is now how you frame your experience. Jeez. I think for me, it's funny because for me, it might be the opposite. Not to be like, you've made me heartless and cold.
I've made you dunked on. Yeah.
Hearing experience. But I do think, not so much on this show. So I don't know if this is outside the question, but definitely when we talk on Locked On or like in person. Actually, I think on this show too, you have made me appreciate sometimes how things can, and it's fine if they are a bit black and white, you know, like to not have to always be in the gray area of the middle ground, you know, and to think of like, no, like this was just really cool because this person scored this many points, or this person doesn't seem capable of scoring this many points. I think the most recent example was at a game we were both at the end of the Raptor season this year. And I kind of looked at you and I was like, you know, I just didn't know. I think for a long time, I was not willing to accept that Kim Birch has not been good.
Yeah.
And you were just like, you were like, yeah, he sucks. Or like, he's like implying like his performance has sucked. But I think there's a certain freedom in that sometimes. And obviously it's not just a bit, like it's not a bit that I struggle against that. That's just how my brain works with anything. But basketball does allow, like, there's so many more facets for my brain to really get to work on. So that's why I approach it that way. But I think being able to sometimes just take a breather, like take a load off, you know, like maybe even turn my brain off and watch it in a clear way and like look at numbers, like take what they give you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't necessarily ever feel as comfortable that way. And it's not where my brain naturally goes. But I think in talking to you more about it, I have felt more that it's fine to do it sometimes. And sometimes it's like the only way that you can talk about things.
Yeah, I think for me with that, and that's very kind of you to say, Katie, I think I have kind of had a realization that I think maybe more so in the last couple of years than ever before, with everything, the weight of the world around it, like basketball, while I think there is lots of room for compassion and to sort of, you know, understand the plight of the players and, you know, kind of understand that this is a human enterprise and it's not just dudes going out there to play hoop for our entertainment. I do think I've come to the realization that this shit's all fucking make-believe. It doesn't matter. And having an opinion on it's kind of fun. And doing trade machine stuff can be actually kind of cool and fun. And it's, I think, again, you know, the more sort of gross parts of that, I think, were a thing I kind of had more in me before. But I'm glad that it sounds like we've each kind of helped each other become more balanced basketball enjoyers. That's very cool to me. Do you have a quirk of a basketball you're going to miss, Katie? The last part of this question from Tristan.
Yeah, I'm going to miss something going wrong technically on your end almost every episode. And you getting mad about it and frustrated and then begrudgingly apologizing when you realize it was on your end.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is definitely a thing that happens for sure.
But did we talk about how our friendship changed? I mean, I guess we just like have more of a friendship, right?
Yeah.
I think this, one thing that is kind of sad is that when we started this and we thought like, oh, we'll be in a studio every week, right? Because we started this like about 3 weeks before the pandemic, really. Really,
never recorded an episode proper in a studio.
Never recorded an in-person episode, but I thought, oh, that'll be fun because we talked about like if it's like a game night, you know, you'd probably like stick around and we could get a bite and we could go down to the game, you know, or like we'd be hanging out more, obviously in person. And we didn't really get that opportunity because we never recorded in person. So sometimes I think like, oh, it would have changed in a different way then. But I think like, knowing I would talk to you every week at a certain time, you know, and we kind of shoot the shit before we got started. I don't know. There's like a comfort there and like a rhythm there. I don't know. We definitely became better friends.
I would 100%
agree. Colleagues, as you said, But yeah, you probably are my closest quote work friend because I absolutely am alone most of the time at home. But yeah.
I mean, Katie got invited to my wedding. She made the cut.
Yeah.
So, I have to say,
like later today, I'm going to pick up from the tailor the dress that I dropped off to wear to your wedding. So, you know, that says something.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, the pilot episode of this show was recorded on Monday, March the 9th, 2020. I remember we recorded the show in the studio. Did we grab a, or was this when we did like a planning meeting also at the Space Monkey Studios in February? It might have been. We planned something out. We went and grabbed a coffee, went to a game, covered the game. It was late February. It might have been the last home game, actually, before the Raptors pissed off for 2 years. And then, yeah, we recorded that pilot on March the 9th. I remember taking the bus home that night after recording it and not having a mask and thinking, oh, this feels a little icky. And then, you know, everything went to shit 2 days later. That was the night that Rudy Gobert got sick. That was the night the Raptors played against Rudy Gobert.
Yes,
we were getting home and watching that game after recording that pilot when we talked about, man, wouldn't it be weird if they didn't have fans in stands? We got to release that shit for the public at some point, I think, if we haven't already. But either way, great question, Tristan. Thank you for it very much. It's your turn to pick a question, Katie. We only got a few left here.
Okay, I'll pick Alan Shane Lewis's question. Alan, of course, came on for the crossover episode of the Century. Well, not as a representation of Canadian Baking Show, but like is a host of Canadian Baking Show.
He did the episode where we did the mascot theory on King Cake Baby, one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah. Alan's great. One of the funniest guys. Also incredibly good at basketball.
Oh, really? I've never seen him play.
There's videos of him just like backing people down. And I'm like, I never. Not that I ever would play against Alan, but it's like, I certainly don't want to now.
Well, as someone who for the annual Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament, as I usually just assemble a team of ringers around me because I know I'm no good. So I'm going to have to message Alan about joining Team Sean for the next RR tournament.
Yeah. He'll humiliate everybody, including
excellent.
You. So if Allen Iverson, Ray Allen and Reggie Miller played in the current NBA, who would have the most points per game? Seems
this
straightforward. But it's not, I don't know that it is.
No, I also like to sort of expand upon this question. I also like to sort of think about what would these players be viewed as today? Ray Allen's pretty recent, right? Like he played within the last decade. So we probably have a bit better of an idea there. But Iverson and Miller are really interesting, very different players, of course. And I feel like Iverson would probably still be the highest scorer of this bunch because he was an unbelievable scorer. I think he averaged like north of 30 a game a couple times, which is fucking bonkers. And Reggie Miller, you know, I think would kind of find himself a home on like a really, really good team as the second best player, like kind of in the Klay Thompson role. And I think Iverson would kind of have his own show. He averaged more than 30 points a game 4 different times in his career. Good Lord. What a monster. Anyway, back to the question. Is it Iverson leading in points per game amongst these three, do you think?
It's tough because he didn't really... This was before the three-point game really proliferated, you know? He was making attempts. Yeah. He was making a lot of attempts in some of his like highest scoring seasons. But like out of sheer volume, right, and production, yes, I feel like it would be Iverson. But, you know, I look at Reggie also. Like, I think it's probably between Allen Iverson and Reggie Miller. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Ray Allen's clearly third here. I'm looking at Klay Thompson's numbers because I think he's probably the closest thing to Reggie Miller today. Miller probably better with the ball in his hands than Klay, to be fair. But pretty similar type players. And I think in the modern NBA would kind of occupy similar roles. The most shots Klay's ever attempted in a season is 18 per game. Allen Iverson averaged 22 a game for his whole career. In some seasons, averaged like 28 shots a game in one season. He also led the league in minutes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. like the accrual for Allen Iverson is still going to be pretty ridiculous, I think. So I think Iverson for sure, Miller second, and then Ray Allen third. But I'm curious, like, for the quants, I do wonder if people would just totally miss the whole point of Allen Iverson today. Like, I wonder if he'd be like an unappreciated star because,
oh, he doesn't shoot threes and he's kind of inefficient and he's kind of small, doesn't play great defense, blah, 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 blah.
Like, I feel like that would be a thing. Do you agree?
Yes, but I think that's changing a little bit because I think we are seeing like physicality is important again, not in like the kind of pure physical, like it's more of like a very smart physicality and the way that it's utilized, you know, not in your just like traditional kind of big man, right? So I don't know. There's always losers who are going to malign what
he only shot 31.3% from downtown in his career.
Yeah, like what looks cool or effortful, right? And like AI could certainly make things look effortful. So I think he would still have as dedicated like a niche following, you know? And yeah, he's the answer in terms of points per game because he'd still figure out a way. And yeah, he'd still figure out a way to do all of this stuff. And a team around him, a team around Prime Iverson now would be very interesting and fun to watch. Like if you take all the specifications now of the way that the game is played, even the like more prototypic way players look and kind of have to play now, it would still be very fun to watch him with a team like that.
Oh, imagine the teams he played on in Philly were him and then guys who played defense and sucked. Like, throw him on a team with like an actual big man and some so shooters. And I feel like you're looking at, yeah, I feel like you're looking at like a prolific player in Allen. Like, probably similar sort of output to like a Russ in his peak, I would say.
Yeah.
Smaller, less dunky, but still.
Guys around him who their job is to shoot the three, right? You would understand, like, that's not what he would be your kind of outlier. Like, that's not what you have him to do. At least if you're a smart coach, that's not the role that you'd put him in. So, I don't know. He'd actually, would he be better?
I think he'd be better because, like, the league would be sort of conducive to him. Like his scoring gravity, I think, would matter a lot more because you have to sort of make all these sort of decisions about, okay, do we send two guys to stop this monster at the rim or do we stay on the shooter in the corner? And he's going to find the shooter in the corner every time if you send the help. Like, I think he'd be really good. Yeah, the 3-point shooting was whatever. But I mean, again, I don't really care. He was just, this man was a bucket, an incredible bucket. Like the maybe the most hooperist of all hoopers, I would argue, Allen Iverson. Also, another thing with him, shout out to him. He's like the one cool player from this era who doesn't get all angry about the like the current day. Like he like loves the current NBA, which fucking rules. Allen Iverson rocks. God, what a guy. A couple more questions here, Katie. We'll get to these quick. I guess there's two that we really should address between our friend Joey and, of course, James Herbert. Let's start with Joey. Joey asks, this is sadly the end of UB, but it got me thinking, what movie has the worst ending? do you have any inklings? I mean, there's a few out there. I'm pulling up the list of movies Alana and I started watching this year, just so I can maybe jog my memory a little bit as to movies I didn't like that had bad endings. What has a low rating that I've scored over here? I mean, I don't like Interstellar. I don't like the ending of Interstellar. I think like the whole thing where he's behind the bookshelf, spoiler alert, it's such a long movie.
He's in another dimension.
In another dimension behind the bookshelf. Like that movie has such legs to me when it first starts out. Oh, the world is unable to produce food anymore.
Yeah, you're like sweating, watching the movie. At least I am. Like it's so stressful. It's so like there's such good pace. You're like, fuck, they gotta figure this out quick.
And it looks amazing. Yeah, it looks so cool. So good.
The idea of like the real like consequence idea of like we could go to these planets, but 1 minute is 40 years. So if we're wrong, we're screwed. Like,
yeah,
that's stakes are stressful. Insane. That stresses me out just thinking about it, because I know that can exist in the world. Not that I'm going there, but it stressed me out watching it. It stressed me out thinking about it now, obviously. And then it does feel like a cop-out, the ending.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot they could have done with it. And like it starts off so, so promisingly. The other one, this one will come up whenever you look for movies with a bad ending, is I Am Legend, which I think I disagree with, honestly. I think it makes sense that he dies at the end of that movie, and they kind of carry on the tradition of the antidote that he's come up with without him being there. I actually think the alternate ending where he survives is fucking terrible. Like that's a thing you can watch on the DVD, and it's a real letdown. It doesn't have the same stakes or gravitas that it does when he sacrifices himself at the end of I Am Legend. So that one comes to mind as well.
Oh yeah. You know, does he die? Do you know that he dies?
Yeah, he like blows himself up at the end to protect the mom and the son, and to keep the antidote in their hands, and then puts them in the little bunker thing.
Okay. What else? I'm trying to think of like less recent movies. I really liked I Am Legend too. Again, right amount of stressful and pacing, and then just something happens at the end and they're like, well,
yeah,
we had to end it.
I don't know if this is the worst ending to a movie, but it's certainly an ending that made me feel anguish. You ever seen The Mist
with the bugs? Not in a while, but yeah,
it's like the one from like the probably like 2008, I would say, is when it came out. Yep. It stars Thomas Jane, Laurie Holden's in it, Marcia Gay Harden. That one where they're in the mist driving through the monster filled hell that they're in. They reach a point where the father is like, there's nothing left for us here. And he kills his son. And then the mist clears and people start walking by, sitting there with his dead son in his arms. It's pretty fucked up.
Oh boy. I'm trying to think of like my fave movies, but they all have great, like good endings, very satisfying endings. Probably why they're my faves.
Right, right.
What's the movie? There's another M. Night Shyamalan movie where the one with the trees are killing everybody.
Oh, The Village.
No.
Oh, like, wait, it's no. Like the trees Happening? Are talking.
Yeah, yeah.
The Happening?
And, like, it kills everybody. I mean, actually, like most of his endings are terrible. I finally watched Old Beach recently, and it's just so like it's so bad. I mean, the whole movie is so bad, but then the ending's also terrible.
Old Beach.
Signs is pretty bad. All of them start well. The Village also. I would rather that have been Weird Monsters. You know.
Yeah,
Much like the thing you think you would have rather that be the ending every time, but then it's like the terrible twist.
Uh huh. Good question, Joey. Hopefully,
it is good, but I feel like there's ones we're just like not thinking of.
Yeah, for sure. If you have any suggestions, send them to Joey on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Don't send them to us. We're done.
Yeah, hopefully this mailbag episode is not the behind the bookshelf scene from Interstellar. Let's hope that.
This is one from like my teenage years, but I still think about it, which is. But like at the end of Titanic, and a lot of people have problems with this ending, but it's true.
Yeah.
At the end of Titanic, there's a lot of room on that door, you know?
Oh, yeah. So much room on the door.
And I guess the logic is like, oh, he tried once and then it almost tips. But wouldn't you try more than once? You would probably try more than once to get some configuration where you're both on the door. Maybe then, but the door sinks a little bit in the water. Still better than having your whole body submerged in the Atlantic Ocean, right?
Let alone having like, two people that you can use to scream for help, right? Like that seems just intelligent and tactically intelligent to have.
So
very dumb.
That was like That was a bummer. I still get mad at that. At the time, not as mad as I was at the time as a young teenager who had a huge crush on Leonardo DiCaprio, but still just like, come on, man. Even if that was your friend, I get more upset thinking about it if it was a friend, you know?
Yeah.
You get them on the door.
100%.
Yeah.
God damn it, Rose. All right, last one here from our friend James Herbert. He started it off. We'll finish it with him. What is basketball, Katie?
Thanks, James. I'm pretty, you know, actually, I was going to say, I don't know that James would have an answer for this, but actually he would.
Yeah, he would say it's whatever the Thunder are doing.
Yeah, he would have a little laugh in there. I think the thing about basketball is it's a nice mirror, but sometimes it's not nice because if you're feeling particularly like glum about things, there's a lot to get angry at in basketball. And I mean, beyond just like the actual stuff that's happening, you know? But if you're feeling good, you're watching a game, it can reflect that back to you too. You find all these like great moments to be floored by, really enamored by, people that you're just like become obsessed with, you know, illogically. Like it's like whatever you want it to be. It is, I think it is a good, sometimes very frustrating, annoying mirror. And I think that's why also a lot of our conversations around it are like end up being so insular or like echo chambery, again, sometimes to their own detriment, but that's what it is to me.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say it's whatever you want it to be. And that's the beauty of it, right? Like it can be something where you, you know, it can be a vessel for you to flex your math skills. It can be something that you view as art. It can be something that is just on in the background while you play video games. It can be a mirror to the world and, you know, in some ways like a vessel for change in the world, good or bad. But that is also part of it. I think for me, basketball is like where individualism kind of gets to shine. And mm-hmm. I think that's my favorite part of basketball is that, you know, what the dumbest thing in the world is player comps, because you can't do it. Everyone's different. That's kind of the whole appeal. Everyone has their own certain idiosyncrasies and style. And I think that is what makes it so enjoyable to watch. And I feel like a lot of other sports can kind of grind you down with the monotony. I have not yet gotten you to become a baseball fan, sadly. It's the one thing I couldn't impart upon you during the show. And I understand why people don't like baseball, because it's fucking the same thing over and over for 6 straight months every day. There's not a lot of difference in it. It's pretty repetitive and similar. There's, you know, football is so like regimented and aligned and like pre-structured. Hockey is kind of the other thing where it's just everything's fucking chaotic and there's no rhyme or reason to anything. Basketball feels like a perfect blend of all the good parts of other sports, kind of all put into one. And also that it has dunks, which rocks. We love dunks. Yeah, I think that's kind of what I got for that one. A very good question from James. Very good questions from everybody. Thank you so much to those who sent in questions for this mailbag episode. Thank you to everyone who has sent in any kind of mailbag question or any sort of comment about the show over the last couple of years. We're so, so thankful that you listened. This was a really fun, creative exercise. Got to do a lot of great stuff with my pal, Katie. And, you know, really, really thankful that this is a thing we got to do. Not, you know, I'm happy that we're kind of bringing it to a close at the time we're bringing it to a close. I think it makes sense for both of us, but we'll always be very, very thankful that we got to do these 102 episodes plus all the Patreon episodes for you, the lovely listeners out there. Katie, any last thoughts here before we put a bow on UB for the rest of time?
No, man, I think we like, again, I said this the last time, but to get started when there was like no basketball whatsoever, I think really, you know, crystallized what the show was, what we already thought it was going to be, but then definitely what it became. And I feel like proud of us for persevering in that time, you know, and also like tackling some pretty, yeah, I think like serious things that we didn't really see getting talked about as much as they should otherwise. Not to call us heroes or anything. heroic of our producers for listening to us, first Dylan and now Greg, for this many episodes. That's the real, they're the real heroes.
Yeah.
And our, I mean, because they hear all everything. The listeners are heroes too, but like, there's a different kind of patience when you listen to it, like, what, more than once.
Yeah, the producers got to hear it twice every week, man. Yeah, that's
at least twice. At least twice.
Boy, oh boy. And the number of times either Greg or Dylan had to do like extra editing that we just like thrust upon them. Like, hey, we're going to do a dramatic reading of something. Can you do some sound effects? yeah, Greg and Dylan made the show go round. Also, huge shout out to Jess, who is our former social producer who stepped aside a little while ago. But we love Jess. She did a great job. And a huge thank to Clay Hansler and Sean Key, the lovely folks who, you know, brought us on originally with the meeting. Couple bit years back talking about the show.
Yeah. And I think through their excitement would like get us excited, more excited, because it's always like different when you see someone else kind of click in and realize your ideas in real time back at you. That's a rare thing. But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, it's a good, it feels like sometimes when it feels like a good time to end something, you got to take that into consideration too. And that's what it feels like for us. I mean, we've said a lot. You could go back. There's a lot. To,
the catalog will remain if you so dare. You can go back and listen to us perform a dramatic reading of Phil Jackson's Dunkenstein.
Yes.
Or Katie's Dunkenstein starring Phil Jackson. That'll all still be there. But
thank you.
Thank you so much to everyone who's listened. We're going to wrap it there and stop being sentimental, mostly because I have to go and jump on a conference call. So we're going to wrap it there. Thank you so much. We will talk to you again sometime. Locked On Raptors for me. Katie's got the Basketball Feelings podcast. Katie's on Locked On Raptors all the time. So there's still plenty of us for you to check out. And thank you very much for listening to this final episode of Basketball. Bye-bye.